Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy, whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage. The Magic Wand should be your go-to with powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns. It's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and on today's show, I'm talking with comedian and actor Adam Ferreira about how important it is to listen to your partner and how to learn to do that. Plus, I'm answering your questions like, who keeps your sex toys after a breakup, how to get into the right headspace to receive oral sex, and a whole bunch more. Thanks for listening.
It's a pandemic. It's like this. It's like I'm in a Whole Foods in Havana, honey. They don't have it. It's empty shelves. There's no organic brand flakes. You're just going to have to push it out on your own.
That's a good way to slice it. You could be like, I'm going to be way better. You won't even remember using these toys on her. So that is another way to take it.
After, you know, maybe having a few glasses of wine at night, it's much better. There's more dirty talking. There's more, like, I'm more open to anal stuff. It just seems better. And I'm wondering how to get that confidence without alcohol.
The word should is a trigger, too.
You know, should is terrible. Do.
I should punch you in your friggin' mouth.
I should.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't shit all over yourself, they say.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. On today's show, I'm talking with comedian and actor Adam Ferreira about his marriage, masculinity, working through childhood trauma. But he's funny. He's entertaining. I loved our interview. See, Adam grew up in a very loud household. Everyone shouted. And since meeting his wife, he had to learn how important it is to hold off on the shouting, you know, just for a few minutes and actually listen to what his wife has to say. Any of this sound familiar? We have to learn. We have to actually, this is what life is about. We need to unlearn all the patterns from our childhood or from watching our parents that were unhealthy
And then when we're with somebody, we get to learn a whole new pattern, because sometimes the stuff that we bring in from, you know, our early conditioning doesn't work. So just look at it like a whole new opportunity. We also talk about how Adam deals with his anxiety. I mean, come on. Do we all have anxiety these days or what? I mean, I always thought we all had a little bit of anxiety. And lately, there's actually been more studies showing that, yep, kids have more anxiety, adults have more anxiety. You know, welcome to 2020. Before the interview with Adam, I also take some calls from listeners. So one woman called me. She's been having a lot of great and amazing sex lately. But the problem is she's drunk. So much so that her question was, well, how do I have sex sober? I like this question. Have you ever been there? It's a pattern. Again, it's all conditioning. I also talked to two different people who need some help sorting out their different sex drives with their partner. Have you ever dealt with this before? I mean, listen, I think it's fair to say that most people are going to encounter this. Someone in the relationship is going to want sex more than their partner. Or maybe your partner is going to want sex more than you do. Maybe your partner wants sex every day. You want it once a week. How do you deal with that? Well, wherever you're at in this conversation, I'm going to give you tips to help make that conversation go a lot better, be more positive, and one where you and your partner come out with a resolution and you feel more aligned. I mean, isn't that what we want? A lot of this is just great communication skills. First up, I answer an email from Eric in Pennsylvania who doesn't know what to do with all of his sex toys after a breakup. And this was a great discussion. I mean, what would you do? So I'm going to answer this email from Eric, 37 in Pennsylvania. I love this topic. I was ready to ask if it's okay for a guy to have sex toys from a previous relationship when starting a new relationship. Historically, I've never had a problem bringing toys into a relationship, but would throw away the one or two things I accumulated at the end. I've been listening to your show religiously the last couple of years, and your recommendations have led to me expanding my purchases. I've purchased many of your sponsor items and highly reviewed items, the Womanizer, the Wee Vibe, the Duo, glass dildos, underbed restraint system, glass dildos for temperature play. God, sounds like my bedroom. Okay, and I'd hate to throw them all away as I've invested a bit of money in them. And we just end up repurchasing them later. Could you take an informal poll of your girlfriends and how they'd feel if a man were in a new relationship and pulled out toys? I've had females pull out toys in previous relationships and never had an issue, but I'm not sure if it's different being the one it's used on. I just want to see if it'd be strange, a turnoff, unacceptable if a man did this. I could think of a few previous girlfriends who would shudder at the thought and others who would not mind at all. I was wondering if there's a consensus. Hygiene wouldn't be an issue. I use an actual toy cleaner. Wouldn't dream of using anything that was less than sanitary. Thanks for any insight you may offer. I love your show and all your great tips. All right, Eric, such a great question because there's a little bit of a double standard here. I'm going to say it. I want to hear from you guys, from my team here, but also my listeners. How would you feel if someone used toys from a previous relationship? 888-947-8277. So if I wasn't doing this show and this wasn't my expertise, I understand why, and I've heard this from friends. They're like, oh, he brought out a toy and he already had a toy. And what does it mean? Now, this was years ago that someone said that. I remember she was like, oh my God. And then he pulled out a toy and I don't know where that toy's been and why did he have a toy? But here's the thing. I want to say this. I think it's totally fine to use a toy that you use in someone else. I mean, you've got like $1,000 worth of toys there, Eric. And I just think it has to be hygienic. Yes, you have to have a talk with your person before that and just say you're really into these toys and you like turning women on and that's they're clean and all that stuff, because I do think that is a thing. And I remember one time, no one's ever questioned me and said, did you ever use that penis ring on another guy? Maybe they're thinking it, but they don't question me on it. And so just make sure that they're clean. But I think it's not like you're supposed to spend $200 on a toy and then throw it away. I remember one time I left all my toys, many toys, not all of them, because that would be crazy. Maybe like 5 toys at a guy's house. Just remember this, that I broke up with. And it wasn't the best breakup. And he shipped me all the toys, but like wrapped up in newspaper with like red tape around it and like just like sent them back to me, all my toys. I was like, all right, dude, thanks. He could have used them on someone. I wouldn't care. But he sent them back to me. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Would you care about that? Would you use toys? And also, another thing it brings to mind, what do you do with the stuff you get from an ex? Like, what if they got you a great gift? I know that I have a drawer full of like jewelry and stuff that people have gotten me. And I don't wear it, but some of it's nice and I just kind of keep it. I also keep every letter I've ever received from someone or email or note, birthday card. But I like that stuff. I'm sentimental. Even if I'm never going to see him again, it's part of my history. What do you guys think? What do you do with stuff that you get in a relationship after you break up? I don't know. I mean, I feel like at this point in my life, I just keep it. Like I just, it's in a place. It's not mixed in with other stuff, but I have a jewelry. Funny enough, I have a jewelry box that a guy gave me that has my initials on it, like probably 20 years ago. And I have like rings and things they gave me. And I don't know. To me, that's my history in my life. I like to have that stuff. So that's how I feel about it. But what do you do with all the stuff? Okay, my assistant says no, hard no on toy reuse with a new partner. But what if it's clean? Would you just throw away a $200 toy?
I feel like it's bad juju if you're bringing it into a new relationship. But maybe that's just me being superstitious.
Yeah, maybe. What if you like lit some sage around it or something?
That could work.
What if you did a ritual? What if you put it out during the new moon or something? You could try that. Yeah. No, I get it. And the natural impulse is that it's wrong because it's so intimate. I guess this is a tricky one. But yeah, you wear lingerie. I've worn lingerie with a certain person and then wear it again, you know? But I know that this is not widely held. I mean, I'm just trying to get you all to feel comfortable with toys, right? I'm just trying to have all you like realize that it's a good thing to try something new and try something different in your relationship. But I'm not saying, you know, I just think what a waste to throw all that stuff away.
I feel like you don't need to lead with the fact that it's from an old relationship. You know what I mean?
But I think if a guy whips out something,
yeah,
a dildo, that you, if you were not somebody who was understood that like toys can be clean, what do you think, Amanda?
If I was seeing a guy and he pulled out a sex toy, I would want to know. I would immediately want to know if it came from, if he like bought it specifically for me or if he had, it was from an ex-partner. But I'm an anxious attachment style. So I have jealousy issues.
So really? Okay. So you would not be, okay. So it wasn't even about hygiene. It was more like now this person's energy, like what Nikita's saying, like it's bad. You have someone else's vagina on it in this. I get it. I understand that.
I wouldn't be able to like, then I would kind of have it in my head of like them using it with each other. And I would know that they had like used it on each other.
Yeah. No, you're right. I got it. I mean, people who are into like kinkier, like BDSM and they have all their like bondage and all their toys, like this is something, but I think it's a lifestyle. And I think if you are into this stuff, you just kind of know. But I know what you're saying. Like, you're like, that is not only like, it's not like having their shirt or someone else. It's like a toy that was in a very intimate place.
And maybe this is selfish of me, but I think it's okay if it's my toy. Like, I think
same.
That's an exception.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, the thing is, yeah, you'd want to see it come out of the box. You'd be like, show me that it came from a box and you just bought it for me. Because you're right, we still have, even though we know that people we've been with have been with other people, it's like the history's right in your face with this vibrator that you know there was another vagina in the place that you're in and it was used. I mean, I'm now that we're talking it through, I get why that is awkward. Mm-hmm. But he's got all these great toys. What is Eric going to do? Literally, if he's got all those toys, he's $1,000 worth of toys, at least. Throw them away. Or just find a partner and be like, listen, I put them, there's something called the UV, which we haven't talked about in a while, but it uses UV light. You plug it in and it kind of looks like a little mini dishwasher and it actually cleans your toys. It stores and cleans and sanitizes them. It's pretty awesome. I have some at the office for my team if you guys want some. But it's a really cool, you can also like wash your phone in it, your jewelry, your makeup brushes. But the point is like, if it's clean, it doesn't, maybe it's still just about like, I know this was, I'm thinking, like, not only am I jealous, for example, but I'm thinking about that person right now, like their vulva's in my face, essentially.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe this guy had like a conversation with his partner first and was like, look, I have a lot of sex toys just because like it's something that turns me on. Would that like be something you were interested in doing together? And then so he like made it a conversation about their relationship and didn't just like whip it out without with like a surprise. Maybe that's
great.
like a lead.
No, that's exactly it, Amanda. Yeah, what'd you say, Nikita?
I said like a lead and almost like a disclaimer.
You need it. And you need to talk about it. Like, yeah, something that's really central to my arousal and to my turn on. It's fantasy of mine is I love getting women off and playing with under bed restraints and toys. And I have a great collection. I would love to give you so much pleasure. Are you down with that? And then, you know, she could think about it. She could let him know. And then when it happens, maybe she'll be so turned on in the moment, she won't really be thinking about where the toys came from. Because to your point, Amanda, yeah, I could see that. Like, oh, this is the other girl you're with. But I'm thinking about my experiences. Like, I mean, I just know guys I'm with. If I go on with someone next week, like, I know he was probably having sex with someone a week ago, a year ago. Like, he's had other partners besides me. So I don't know. If I don't know anything about his history, and it's a new thing, and we're dating, and, you know, I think it's just like, I like that he's in, you know, personally, he's into pleasure.
Sometimes, honestly, it like turns me on when like other people want to be with my partner, or where like, if I know that they have like kind of a like raunchy history, I'm like, oh, and now you're with me. So like, I'm the one you're with now. So I can see it from your perspective too, where it's like, and then you get kind of territorial and you're like, oh, you think she was good with that sex toy? Well, wait till you see what right. I can do.
Exactly. That's exactly it, Amanda. I see, that's a good way to slice it. You could be like, I'm going to be way better. You won't even remember using these toys on her. So that is another way to take it. You're right. And they are with you in that moment. But do you want to hear, Amanda, about their previous sex, like what they've done?
It's interesting you ask me that, because sometimes I do. Like there was one time when I was at a party and my boyfriend was DJ, and he was getting a lot of attention from girls. And like that night, like I dressed really cute and I was getting a lot of attention from other guys. And it didn't make me jealous. It like was a turn on. So it's something that I've been investigating, because I do kind of like hearing about my like ex's past, because it elevates his like hot commodity-ness, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, knowing that he was desirable and somebody else had wanted him before. But then when does the jealousy come in? When do you get jealous?
I think I get jealous when it's like there's an emotional, like when I feel like there's like still like some emotions left behind. Like if he sees a picture of his ex on social media and he like has like an emotional response to that, that like makes me more jealous than hearing about like his sexual history.
Yeah. No, I think that is so true. And that is so commensurate with all the studies that come out that like women typically in a relationship are, well, I think, you know, honestly, I don't even believe this is a gender thing, but for many of us, if we hear about there's an emotional attachment, or they still can't get over it, or there's something like that, we get way more jealous. Or I've been in relationships where there's been jealousies when there's been a discrepancy. Like there's something happened where they said they didn't see their ex, or they did, or there was a lying. There's some reason to not have trust. So if there was even a little bit, then it just sets it go, you know. But or yeah, if they're like, oh, I couldn't get over her for 2 years, and then he's like, and here's the dildo I used on her, you'd be like, get the fuck out.
Yeah,
I don't want the dildo of the ex that you can't get over.
Yeah, it seems like it's a situational thing.
Yeah, it is situational. Wow. Yeah, jealousy is. What about stuff from an ex, Amanda? What do you do
with like?
What do you do with things when you break up with someone?
This is probably not good advice, but I procrastinate on dealing with it by giving it to my friends. So like, for example, my ex made me this like beautiful wood mural. Like he made me this beautiful wood art that is huge, and I couldn't get rid of it because it was so gorgeous, and it wasn't like a piece of jewelry. I couldn't hide it anywhere. So I called upon like some of my girlfriends, and they kept it for me for a while, but then like eventually I had to get it back, and that was like, I still have it. It's under my couch now. I don't know what to do with it.
Would you give it back to him?
I don't think he'd want it. I think he's the kind of guy who would take that as an insult.
Yeah. Really? Okay. Maybe get rid of it then. Now that to me might be, that's a big piece. I had that from a guy once. He painted a picture of me, and it wasn't a very good picture of me. And it was like a naked picture too. And I was like, what do I do with this? I think I finally gave it away. But yeah, if you're thinking about it and it was not a good relationship, maybe you're going to give it away.
I know. I do remember though, when I was growing up, my mom had this like beautiful futon and we would always like hang out on it. And I found out like as a teenager that it was from her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. And then how'd that feel? It's a couch. It felt it was comfortable. Let's talk about Emily 40 in Colorado. She's got some comments about previously used toys. If a new partner whipped out toys that he used with an old partner, what do you do, Emily? Tell me everything.
Well, I thought what you all were talking about that was really interesting was the difference between I really like toys and I want to use them on you and these are mine versus these are mine with an ex.
Yes.
Like I think it's different who it belongs to. Is it my toy or is it something you bought as a present to use with someone else? Like,
yes.
Whether or not it's a toy, that's just a very weird thing to say.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Emily. So what you're saying is you couch it as like, I'm really into turning you on. I have a really great collection of toys. Would you be into that? Don't mention the ex. Don't mention anything. Yeah. That's it.
Well, and
that's
it shouldn't be because I guess if you think about it in terms of it belongs to me, like I like this is mine. That I think that's the difference.
Yes,
is that sex toys have always been mine, not mine with him, mine for me that right. I use with him.
Right. That makes so much sense. But if he's got like a dildo that only goes inside of a vagina or a clitoral toy and he doesn't have a clitoris.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's what I'm talking about. Like he's got like the womanizer, which is like, you know, like a clip. It's for the clitoris, so clearly. I mean, you could use it on your shaft, but that's not why he got it. So I think it's just the language.
Yes.
Well, okay,
I think
Emily.
It's what's attached to it.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think you're going to be whipping out your toys to use with someone else if you're still attached to your ex. It's like they ate on your dishes. They probably ate at your house to be the dishes in the dishwasher. You're not thinking about that chicken you had with them that night. You're like, now we're having another meal. I mean, I get toys are more intimate, believe me. But I think that's a good way to frame it, Emily.
Yeah, awesome.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Tell me. Yeah, of course, Emily. Okay. Super helpful. I think Eric's going to get, he'll be fine. Thanks, Emily. You know, so Eric, to answer your question, just it's how you couch it, you're into it. And I think all of us, when you want to talk to a new partner about something you want, remember this. You don't want to lead with, this would be, you know, all the things. Like, I want to have a threesome and can we use toys? Like, I think you always got to couch in, like, I want to see you turned on. I want to give you pleasure. I think this would be hot because you would have this kind of reaction or orgasm or pleasure. And I think when all of us want to hear that it's more about us, right? Or that our partner wants something for us rather than, you know, I got these with my ex and here they are on my nightstand. You know, no, just be confident and tell them what it's about. All right. More calls and my conversation with comedian and actor Adam Ferreira after this quick break.
There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co.
Let's talk to an anonymous female, 24, in Washington. Hi, how you doing?
Hello.
How can I help you, sweetie? What's going on?
So, I've been dating this guy for a while, and we're having pretty good sex. But when we have sex after, you know, maybe having a few glasses of wine at night, it's much better. There's more dirty talking. There's more, like, I'm more open to using different toys, more open to anal stuff. It just seems better. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how to get that confidence without alcohol.
Such a great question. You know, a lot of us use alcohol or drugs to give us sort of this confidence because it like lowers your inhibitions. But like lowering your inhibitions isn't necessarily mean that you're having better sex or that you're even more intimate. It's sort of like this cloak that we wear over ourselves to make us feel, you know, we think it's making us more connected with somebody. And it's really just practice. I have to tell you that it's a matter of knowing that you can without the alcohol and maybe even stating it with your partner. Like, does your partner drink a lot too?
No, it's just some evenings we'll have a few drinks, and we find that we're more adventurous and, we come away from the experience both like taking away really good things, but it's hard for me to like look at that same toy that I might've used, while a bit tipsy and say, oh, okay, I'm okay with that, you know?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a practice. Like, here's the thing, like we typically use, you know, alcohol or whatever to kind of make us safe, right? We use it for confidence building, but there's so many, like, I know a lot of people who have actually gotten sober and they're like, God, you know, they like at first, like, how could I have sober sex? It's going to be terrible. It's going to be so hard, you know, and then you realize that, oh, it's actually better because I'm present and I'm mindful. So, but it is a practice. Do you think you could try to do it without alcohol? And then I would have you visualize how the sex is going to go down beforehand. Like, for example, do you ever fantasize or masturbate?
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So what might be helpful is the next time you're fantasizing, you're masturbating, think about the next time you're going to be together and what's going to happen, okay? I want you to think about he comes in the door, he's undressing you, you got your toys out, and then plan it, think about it. And then once you kind of have a plan in your head about what you want to happen, I mean, that's how we like manifest everything is actually having when we visualize what we want. So that's just one way. So you're like, I have a plan. I have something to look forward to and I know how this sex is going to happen. But the only thing I can tell you about, you know, do you drink a lot? Like, do you think that alcohol is a challenge in your life or you're just saying during sex, you tend to drink more, to be honest?
I think it was just, it's definitely not a problem. I don't drink that much. And so when I do, it affects me quite a bit. Same for him. If we just have sex after having a few glasses at night, then it's like, it's a different experience.
Yeah, it's a different, No, I understand that. I think a lot of us have been through that. So my exercise for you, because it's a confidence thing too, right? Like we think that alcohol is giving us more confidence and we feel much more assertive and we can kind of do anything. And then you have like a hangover and you kind of end up feeling worse because alcohol is a depressant. So again, what this is going to come back to is you, when you're self-loving, masturbating in your house, doing your thing, start to work on your own pleasure. And in fact, that is the most empowering thing in the world. Like a woman who knows what feels good and knows what you want. And that's also a practice. So like the alcohol has become a practice right now. Like I'm having sex, I'm going to have a few drinks and I'll feel better. And so the flip side of that would be you being mindful and a few times a week saying, I'm just going to like masturbate. I'm going to explore. I'm going to think about this experience. I'm going to feel into my body what it feels like, because then that becomes your habit too. Because then when you don't have alcohol, then you find this amazing thing that you actually become more in touch with your body and enjoyment and what feels good to you rather than more of like a numbing. And
okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it is a practice, but I just know this from so many who have stopped using alcohol or drugs that it's a little, you know, like anything, you know, learning anything new, it might be at first you'll be like, oh, I can't do it. And then you realize, oh, wait, this is so much better because I'm actually my entire body, mind, spirit's engaged in this moment. So you have it in you. So the alcohol, you're telling yourself you need that. But now you know what that looks like. Think about what you actually want when you're not drinking, and then it'll just become a new pattern in your brain that you can create in the moment without alcohol.
Awesome.
Does that feel like you can do that?
Yeah, I think that I'm going to try that.
Well, let me know how it goes, okay? I'm here for you every night. You can call me back and let me know.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Of course, I'm here for you. So here's one from Ashley. She's 27 in Canada. Emily, I recently just got out of a 9-year long-term relationship and started having sex with a new partner. After the first few times of having sex, I squirted for the first time ever in my life. Needless to say, I was just as surprised as my partner. I was so embarrassed and caught off guard. My question is, why is it I can squirt with one partner and not the other? I love your show. Thanks in advance. So that's one squirting question I get asked, and it's really just a matter of how you are being stimulated. It's about being aroused and turned on. For women, it's about, you know, making sure that you are happily, like your clitoris is played with, maybe you already have an orgasm. You're getting all the, you know, the blood rushing to your entire genital area. And then the squirting can come from internal stimulation. So it's either with a penis, a dildo, a finger, and it's a repeated pressure internally on those nerve endings. And that is when the squirting can happen. So it could also be about the angle of your last partner. Maybe there was a certain angle that he was at that he was, you know, it's sort of like you're changing the angle. So your urethra is sort of much easier for the fluid to be expelled. Now, yes, it is fluid that is stored in your bladder, but it's called the Skene's gland, because I know you're all wondering if it's pee. I say, why the hell does it matter? But there are some traces of urine, but it is not urinating. It is a release of fluids that comes from this deeper repetitive penetration, and it has to do with positioning. It has to do with your arousal. So the more aroused you are, the more likely you are to expel fluids, squirt, female ejaculate. Let's talk to Brooke, 45, in Pennsylvania. Hi, Brooke. What's going on?
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Hi. How can I help you?
I'm sorry, this is not a question about squirting.
No, I needed to announce Squirt Week, but I'm done. Tell me everything.
I have a rare quiet moment to myself, and I wanted to talk to you about like a big picture issue. I'm 45. I've got two tweens. I have one parent who passed away, another ailing parent that I'm caring for a lot. I've got a great, loyal husband, partner. We have a decent sex life. He has a very high sexual appetite. I don't, but I try to keep up. But I think my biggest overall question, and I feel like maybe you can help me, is that I often feel, the right way to put this, not that like, do I not deserve the pleasure, like to get to a place where getting pleasure, receiving pleasure, and getting psyched up to be sexual, to have that enjoyment and have that part in your marriage is not a chore, not something that shouldn't be in the forefront when the other stuff just constantly feels so much heavier and so much more of a weight that it pulls you in that direction versus at the end of the day wanting to rip your partner's clothes off. We just don't do. I want that fire, and I want it for my partner because he's amazing and he's great. And I feel like when we do get in a good groove, our marriage is a million times better.
Right, but you just got to get there.
Do you have any like good advice, things I can tell myself?
Yeah, I do, Brooke. Well, first off, you've probably had it before, right? Like you had it at the beginning of the relationship, right?
I mean, we must have. I honestly have a hard time remembering, and I sadly do fantasize a decent amount about an older boyfriend that was very passionate sexually, but a bad relationship.
Right. super common. Like all my friends who are like your age, Brooke, are like, yeah, it's fine. You go back to the last partner because you want, you're craving variety right now. You also need to learn.
I heard so, that pizza comment.
Pizza sex. You're having pizza sex every night. So
I told my husband that, and we didn't have pizza sex the other night, and it was great.
Good. You know what? It's a habit. It's getting, it's finding out how you can have time. I mean, it's hard with tweens and COVID and everyone's home and your parents sick. And I'm sorry about that. And it is a lot of stress. But I want to tell you, Brooke, that this is so common that women, we beat ourselves up for so many things, right? I should be, we should all over ourselves. I should be turned on and I should be wanting sex and I should. Well, here's the thing. There's the thing about arousal and desire. It doesn't just hit us over the head like we think it should. Oh, I'm always in the mood. I'm going to want it. We, unfortunately, Brooke, it's another thing that we have to prioritize. But it doesn't even have to take a lot of time. It just needs to take a little bit of planning and carving time out in your week, in your day, where you are like giving yourself time or with your partner, you're like clearing space because it's really hard to switch from A to B, like the kids and the your parents and the home and then all, yeah, now I'm ready for sex. It's like giving yourself right. that time to be aroused, to be turned on. So you know I'm going to talk about self-pleasure because continuing to do that because sex begets sex. The more you have orgasms, the more you're going to want them. But also like letting your partner know what you need from him. Like when, like, have you gotten babysitters lately? Have you been able to have a date night? Have you gotten out of the house together? Have you gotten out of the house apart? Have you had any time to yourself in the last few months? Because then there's no space to even create that energy with him, you know?
I mean, we can leave our kids alone for a while. That's not right. a big deal, but he wants sex every day. And I never feel like I need it, want it, even though once we get into it, I'm enjoying it and he does a nice job on me.
Right.
like I'm always happy and satisfied, but I never feel like, oh, I'm in the mood. We're doing
right.
it later.
No, I know. And this happens, Brooke. And so just knowing that about yourself, this is why you got to schedule it. You got to be like, we are having sex on Saturday and Wednesdays. And then on Saturday night, you have a chance to look forward to Saturday night. You do what you do. You shave your legs. Maybe you masturbate beforehand. You make sure the kids are gone and you like plan it out. Because right now, the pressure that you're going to come home every or you see your husband every day and he's going to want sex is also contributing to your anxiety around it. So if you can even talk to them about it and be honest and say, I'm trying to find out ways that I get really aroused. I mean, you might need a 10-minute back rub. And that might calm your nervous system so you actually can feel into your body. You can breathe into it. I mean, when we're just switching from one stressful thing to another, it's all about giving your, that's why we love vacation sex. Because we're relaxed. We're away from home. We're not having the same stressors. So I'm throwing out all these things too because it's like something, it has to shift in you. And then you can like, it could just be a 10-minute, you know, give me a massage or I need to plan it, but we can't do it any other day. Does any of this resonate with you, Brooke? Is there any of it that you think you could take one thing away and try? It's a
yeah,
practice.
And as you're saying it, like there have been times where, yes, we went through things like that and tried certain things and they do work better.
Yeah.
And ironically, he doesn't like the concept of scheduling it, even though I tell him it's the best thing for me because he
yep.
feels like it takes the fun out and there's no spontaneity. And then if I schedule it and something happens and it doesn't happen that night, he feels let down and then doesn't think that the next
right.
scheduled one will happen either.
Well, we got Raina call in. She's 52 in South Carolina and she's got a comment for Brooke. So Brooke, keep holding and we're going to talk to Raina for a second. Hi, Raina. Thanks for
Hello,
calling.
How are you?
Hello. How can we help?
Hello. This is a large problem in my household. So I'm 52
yes.
and I still have great sex drive. And we've been together for 6 years. And he says, just like she said, I don't care if we have sex ever. I'm content. But when we have it, it's fine. Everything's good. But I wanted to talk to her from my standpoint of the one who's not getting it and wants it. It is horrible. It's rejection. It's an argument. And Emily, I think you said it a while back. It's your only problem, but then it becomes everything.
Yes.
And it is awful. And I mean, I've contemplated leaving over this.
Oh.
And so I would just say to her, if he doesn't want to schedule it, you schedule it in your own mind and surprise him twice a week and jump his buns. I mean, just go after it and do it.
Right.
It'll make a huge difference in the relationship.
It really does. People think that everything's great but the sex. But what I say is that when sex is a problem in the relationship, it's 90% of the problems. If it's not a problem, you don't think about it. But, well, thank you, Raina, because I'm telling you, you're right. And we got to schedule it, even if it's not sexy or it doesn't feel hot. But you're right. There is that rejection thing. But I got to ask you, and then I got to go, Brooke, because we only have a few more minutes. But have you talked to him about it? Have you talked to him problem solved?
We have talked about it so many times. And so what you just said to her earlier about, you know, we've talked about the scheduling because I heard you say that. Then he's like, I don't want to schedule it because then if it doesn't happen, you'll be mad. So we've talked about it an awful lot. But you told her she's just going to make it a point to do it. And that's kind of where I'm at with him. I'm not going to be in a loveless marriage from now to death. I just can't do it. I got to have this. It's not just the sex, it's the intimacy and the affection.
It's intimacy and it's the touching and the affection. We need it. So the thing is, I get what she's saying, and I love this because it's so true that he probably feels rejected. You don't want him. You're not taking care of it. But have you sat down with him and had an honest conversation where you've been like, listen, let's talk about how to problem solve this. Like, I know you don't think scheduling sex is sexy. I promise you my intent will be for it to happen. If it doesn't happen, I'll make it up the next day. But then you just try to stick with it. Like, what is great sex to you? Does he give you a massage first? Does he, you know, what does it look like? And then you just try. And then if it doesn't, you talk about it. You don't just ignore it because this is the problem. We don't talk about it enough. You guys could take my yes, no, maybe list at sexwithemily.com and think if there's some things that you haven't tried yet that could turn you on. It's an effort. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. Want to find out more about this? Well, check out sexwithemily.com. We'll be right back. I'm really excited to talk to my guest. He can help too. I believe he can. Adam Ferreira. He's the host of the Adam Ferreira podcast, 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. And it's an awesome podcast. It's so funny. I was on it a few weeks ago and it's going to be coming out. You may also know him as a previous host of Top Gear. Some people on my team knew him from that. Or current star Why Women Kill on CBS. And I just found out he's going to be in Denver doing stand-up. Adam Ferreira, welcome to the show.
Good to see you again, Emily. Thank you for
Good
having
to see
me.
You too.
Thanks for the pressure. Here's another guest that can help. I can't be any help. It's awful.
Well, I just thought you could maybe be the anti-help too. Like maybe you give the opposite advice and then you allow me to sound like the expert. So either
I'll
way,
that,
I know
yeah.
we'll have a good time.
Perfect.
How's it been going? So you're home doing your podcast, which I'm very excited to be on it, that it's going to air this week. But also you're with your wife at home working, doing a podcast, living during quarantine for the last 86 years. So how's that going?
Yeah. And look, it's been great. The podcast, yes, your episode is up this week. It's great. And my wife is on the show with me. So not only we live together, we work together. And it's been an adjustment because I usually either go on the road. I'm either going on the road doing stand-up or I'm going on the road shooting a movie or shooting something. So it's like I'm in, I'm out. So I'm actually invading my wife's home, my wife's office, because she works here. So it was a big adjustment. And every afternoon, I go for my Save My Marriage walk. So I just get out of the house, you know.
She locks the door.
Yeah, we need a pineapple.
Don't come back for now.
Yeah, Emily, we don't need a pineapple.
You what?
So we go to pineapple. We don't need pineapple. But I go for my walk. I give her a break. She has her bird. She feeds and the dog. So she got her creatures in the backyard. And it's just making that space. And one of the things we addressed on the podcast was communication and giving people space. And knowing when the power shifting dynamic in a relationship. The best thing about my relationship is I know when my wife's crazy kicks in, this is her time. I got to get her through this crisis. I got to organize her thoughts. I got to turn her looking this way and then stay out of the way till she gets to where she needs to get to.
See,
and
but
she
that's
knows
magic.
She has to do that for me. What?
Well, exactly. Okay. So what you just said, which I love, Adam, is that we all have our crazy. I'm going to guess. Well, I actually know you've got your crazy. And just if we acknowledge that we all have a crazy and our job in a relationship, maybe you can give advice, Adam, because our job in a relationship is to know when they need that space and then we listen. We don't try to solve. We don't talk over them. We listen and we give space. You're great.
That was huge for me. I'm a solving. I'm like, what's the bottom line? Who do I got to kill? What needs to be painted and where do you want this moved to? I mean, that's...
right. But now you listened. How did you learn that? How long did it take? You've been together a while, right?
Yeah, we've been together a while, but it took a lot... It took a lot of yelling and screaming, you know, because I was conditioned to growing up in New York. You know, we're loud people. Italians living in New York, even the opera's loud and it's never a happy ending.
So, exactly.
No one goes to the opera going, I can't believe she lived. Everybody dies. So we were I was in New York and I grew up in that household where the fact that my mother and father loved each other was never in question. My father held my mother up. And he told me, he goes, when I was a kid, he goes, you want to live like a king? You treat your wife like a queen. So that's the instinct to care for someone and to be there to help someone be a better person is always there.
Okay.
But the communication was just yelling.
Right.
So in answer to your question, how did I learn that? I learned that the yelling wasn't helpful. I learned that the yelling didn't solve anything. And even the volume when you were happy was it's jarring when someone who didn't grow up that way.
No, exactly. But that's good. Then you have to lower your voice and then you listen. But how are you doing?
And you listen. And she taught me how to realize that. She's like, look, this is the answer, but you can't see it now. Light bulb went off in my head. Oh, my adrenaline's too high. I can't see that this is the answer. She goes, you'll get to where you need to get to. And she trusted me to figure out what the right move would be. To whatever to take that right action would be. And I realized, oh, there's times when you can hear stuff and times when you can't hear stuff. And then when I saw her do it, I'm like, it's my job to point you in that direction.
She mirrored it to you. It's true. This is what so many couples do. They're like, well, I told them I wanted this. So I did it. But most people start these conversations the wrong way. You never initiate sex. You never ask me how I'm doing. Like, no one hears you.
The word never is a trigger. The word should is a trigger, too.
You know what you should do?
I should punch you in your friggin' mouth.
I should.
Yeah.
Don't shit all over yourself, they say. I should. I've got a lot of should. It's like a guilt thing. But you're supposed to not shit all over yourself. I heard that. It's true. Because we do that. We should do it to others. We do it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So how has it been going at home? You're, creating content.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean,
there's a lot of energy spent on the collective project of the podcast that I do. So it's done here at the house. And then, you know, we eat and we still do a lot of things together. So we're always together. But then when it comes time for me and her, you know, it's like, come here, baby. I love you. So you're done.
Tired. So tired. We're also goddamn tired.
We have to schedule it. We have to schedule just sitting. By the time we're laying in bed together and I'm holding my wife and I smell her hair, God, that's one of my favorite things, Emily.
Really?
Smell my wife's hair?
The pheromones.
Girl hair? My wife's hair? Yeah.
Are you more tired now because COVID? You're just home and there's not enough change except for when you're going to get pineapple?
I think I'm more tired now because I'm more mentally focused on getting things done. You know, it's not like, all right, I got to go to get on a gig. I'd be on an airplane. As much as you don't want to be on an airplane, it was 5 hours in a tube. So you could just sit, regroup and everything and go to a show and you would regroup in a green room. There was a rhythm to the day because there was movement in the day. Now that there's no movement, the only movement is in your head. And my head is the worst place to be. I'm always projecting into the future and creating anxiety that things aren't going to get done about stuff that hasn't happened yet. So I got to guard against
that. So you live in the future. Do you do the past or are you mostly future tripping?
Yes. When I look into the future, I have anxiety. When I look to the past, I have regret. How's your day going?
See, that's the condition and that is the opposite of mindfulness. Mindfulness, which is a goddamn practice and it's so hard, which is why I love radio. Because right now, I am live in Los Angeles, sitting here, talking to Adam Ferrara. It's a thing. I am not distracted. But it's 6:02. Try to get me to be linear. But it is hard. And those future trips into the future, it's like, I guess what I've realized, and I know you meditate as well because we've discussed this, but you literally, it's our mind. Our thoughts are not the truth.
No.
No one's programming us.
No.
And it's just so hard. And sometimes you're like, I'm going to be really there we go, tripping. You know, I'm in the future. And you just got to keep bringing it back.
Then
we have less distractions.
First of all, knowing that our thoughts aren't our identity. That was the big thing. It was like, that's not me. Well, that's everything you grew up with. That's the behavior of what you do. So by me meditating, one of the big things I had to get over was surrender. Just the idea of it, the concept and the word didn't fit right. But I'm not surrendering my identity or my values or anything. I'm surrendering to the idea of what I think this moment should be.
Yes, the control.
Yeah. Oh, that's a big, I got shitloads of control issue.
Well, surrender is control. It's like give up control. It's like the first step in AA, right? Like,
yeah, right. It's trust for me. It's control, but I think it's connected to trust.
Not trusting that other people have your back or that it'll work out.
Not trusting anybody. Listen to me. Does it sound like I trust people?
If I don't obsess. Okay, so this behavior, I'm obsessed.
Like, what do you want for Christmas? A plausible deniability. I would like that in a sweater.
I hear you. It is. It's so hard. Trust and control are so deeply linked, and it is from our primary caregivers. And you know what annoys me sometimes? People are like, not annoys me. Okay, this is what most people do. They're like, oh, well, my childhood was perfect. Yeah, maybe you had perfect parents and they were amazing, but they're still going to mess you up. You're still going to learn reactions to things.
Yes.
That are because those are the only reactions you saw growing up.
Yes.
How would you know any different? And then our whole adult life is undoing that.
Yes, absolutely. I got married. I thought I was happy. Nothing was wrong. Then my wife had a list. And she was right. It was even like you said, even the communication, when we would go back to communication, it was loud. My father would yell. Here's an example of the volume and the trust issues in my house. They'd be screaming and yelling. And my father would be like, and you never let anyone outside this house know what we're talking about in here. You hear me? I'm like, the windows are open and you're screaming. They hear
all
you.
Everyone knows.
Everybody knows. What secrets are you keeping?
I can't imagine your house at the holidays. Is everybody just screaming?
Yeah, there's a lot of yelling, there's a lot of food, a lot of love in my family, a lot of love.
Right, a lot of loud love.
A lot of yelling.
I understand.
No communication. It's loud, but no one's saying anything.
Yeah.
It's food. Even if you bring up your feelings in my house, I'm like, Mom, I'm not happy. Yeah, just eat. Just shove it down.
What about your thought, your tripping thoughts? Is this something that happens in your family?
But they're not aware of it. They're not aware that is what's happening. They're just aware this is the way the world is because that's the way they see it. I mean, as my father got older and my mother got older, they'd be like, eh. You know, it'd be like, they didn't adhere to those beliefs so strongly because I think because the kids were grown and we were taking care of ourselves. So the protective nature of my father was, he could relax a little bit and let go of the fear of the world, you know, protecting his family from the world that he couldn't trust. So as you got older and that responsibility, when your children are grown, kind of relaxes a little bit. And let's say when you get older, you run out of energy too. You know, look, crazy is exhausting.
Yeah, it is because your mind, you don't have to go anywhere to be exhausted from your thoughts just turning over and over in your head about what you're doing wrong, what you did wrong, what you might do wrong in the future.
Yeah, and the thing that got me was it's not like one day I wake up, oh, it's all over. It's a constant practice. You constantly catch yourself being in the future or thinking in the future or obsessing about something. And, oh, I'm doing it again. You have to reset. It's like even in meditation, the ultimate goal that I'm experiencing now at the point I'm at now is observing my thoughts.
Yes.
I observe them like this. I see you motherfucker.
But see, that's good.
Talk to them. Yeah.
Okay, but what about when you do?
I don't talk to them. I threaten them.
Yeah. Well, you could. You could have an awful name for them. You could be like, you're the asshole. Because they're not us. Like if you separate. I don't know why anyone doesn't tell you this. We learn such useless stuff in school. How about your thoughts aren't real and like, here's how to do the stock market or something. Here's how to do taxes.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah.
That would have been useful.
And
can I ask you about doing comedy?
Blackjack table. I'm sorry.
I have a question for you about comedy and stand-up.
Yeah.
Because you do stand-up too, right? You do.
Mm-hmm. I will be at the Denver Comedy Works August 20, 21, and 22.
I want to go to Denver. Things are open there?
Yeah, it's fine. I think it's going to be we're open. I think it's going to be a limited audience, but it's going to be a lot of fun to be back there. It's the club that's, it's called Denver. It's the South Club. So it's the one out in the suburbs. And it's August 20th, 21, 22, the Comedy Works.
I want to go to comedy. So when you're doing stand-up, though, what's your mind doing? Like, I was just telling you when I'm doing this show, I'm like, I can connect with people. But are you in the flow?
That's where I'm the most present. When I'm on stage, and I'm improvising. And written material takes me to a certain level. And then when I'm improvising with the audience, no net, just me and them, everything gets this big. And I'm totally present because I can't think. And I had that awareness my first or second time on stage. I go, I can't think. This is great. And it's just, you're a vessel. Everything is just coming through you.
So that's why you love it.
Yeah, and on Top Gear, driving very fast does it too, because there's no time to think. You think
it's a thrill. It's the adrenaline.
Yeah, but you're doing about 140, a car will start getting light and coming up off the frame. Yeah. I did it in a Superleggera, which is a Lamborghini. I did 180. And at 140, you can feel it coming up. And any movement is magnified and poof, you're dead. So I get that. I get more of a sustained presence doing stand-up in a live audience.
So when there's a risk of death or I guess of being, being embarrassed, or you're entertaining people, so you're in flow.
Yeah, I don't think it's being embarrassed, because that was a big fear. And I think part of the things that pushed me into being able to do my job and to be able to do what I can do on an improv level is it pushed me, because I went past that fear without even knowing that I was passing it. I experienced that laugh, and it was like hitting a golf ball right when I was a kid on stage. I'm like, I belong here. I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but this is where I need to be, and I can't control it coming to me. I got to set the conditions where it can happen to me again.
Yeah. You had that knowing. That's what it is when you find your passion, you find your thing. And here's the good news for you, Adam. We were looking at this podcast trends that it showed the trends over the last few months since COVID, and like true crime was really high and all these other things. Mm-hmm. And then it showed true crime took a nosedive and all the comedy podcasts were rising. So I think that the 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back podcast.
Yeah, it's great.
The upside.
Yeah, and I've been having such a great time connecting with friends and people I didn't know. I've had Nathan Lane did an episode for me. Edie Falco is a friend. I did Nurse Jackie with her. She's on. Kevin James, Anthony Edwards. Goose spoke to me. It was great. I actually got to say, talk to me, Goose, to Goose.
You did? These are good talks. So it's kind of fun from home. I mean, it's weird because we're on Zoom. Like, I feel like I know you now, but we've never met in person.
I really enjoyed talking to you. I mean, even my editor, when I gave him the interview, he said, it's an hour. I said, we had fun. Make it
sick. Is it an hour? Is it going to be an hour? Even though it's 30 minutes, you can't get back?
Our episode is actually a little bit longer than they usually are, because I was having such a good time with you. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. I know. It was fun. We talked about a lot. We talked about like gender roles and attraction and masculinity, toxic. I don't know. I don't remember what we said, but people might be interested.
Yeah.
Your confusion.
Getting at what can you do? What can you? It's all right. I'll tell you the story. I went to Whole Foods because I go to provide for the wife, and that's where the modern man hunts.
That's where you leave for an hour.
I have to go. Yeah. And here's the thing: I don't even know why she sends me, because I don't have the power to buy anything. I have the power to take a picture of the ingredients, text them to her, and await further instructions. Standing there in the aisle, that's what I'm allowed to do.
You're
so she keeps reading everything. So I'm in there. I saw a guy snap Emily in the. He was in the cereal aisle. He's in there. He's got the mask on. He's FaceTiming his wife on the phone. So he's holding up the phone. And I hear him say, they don't have it, Laura. They don't have it. Look, now you can see everything I can see. All right? It's a pandemic. It's like this. It's like I'm in a Whole Foods in Havana, honey. They don't have it. It's empty shelves. There's no organic brand flakes. You're just going to have to push it out on your own.
Well, it is true. Those shelves can be tricky sometimes. You think you don't see it and someone else can see it on all the shelves. That's
having a wife. That's Wi-Fi. Every time I scream, honey, it's not here. She comes up. It's right in front of me. You're a witch. That wasn't here.
That wasn't here when you just looked. Oh, my God. People are losing it right now. And there is nothing in stores. I find it annoying.
Yeah.
I get it, though, because it's COVID.
Yeah, but it's like it's... This Zoom culture, what we're doing now is, I'm still getting used to it. And there's an intrusion of other people. It does lend itself to a little bit of humanity. I'll tell you why. I was talking to my shrink over Zoom, because let's be honest, I can't be left unattended.
No, I'm so glad you're still shrinking. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm talking to my shrink, and there's a power dynamic in that relationship. Your doctor, it's very serious. You're talking about maybe some painful, maybe some stuff, a reaction you wanted to change to stimulus when you were a child.
Yes.
You're in a vulnerable state. So I'm sitting there, and I would hear him go, and his name is Marty, my shrink. And Marty said, well, you know what? That just opened a door. That's in your childhood. This is the reason you felt less than your father. And the reason is, and I heard in the back, Marty, the dog shit on the stairs again.
No.
Marty, hold on. I'm working up here. Just screaming.
Your therapist?
Because he's like, please excuse me. And he covered his camera, but the mic was still on. He's like, I'm working up here, Susan.
back. Oh my God. Ow. Right during the insightful moment. Yes. Oh, dude, these are
dog
crazy.
Shit on the stairs again.
Well, that I would yell too. That's I'm glad you're taking care of yourself, Adam. I love having you here. Okay, so people can find you everywhere. You're doing a lot, Adam. It's good that you're staying home, making more content for people, and going to Denver.
You can get me at Adam Ferrara on all social media. Talk to me Tuesday. If you go to my website, click the link every Tuesday at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We have a conversation with our internet family. Basically, Emily, thousands of people show up to watch my wife scold me. But
you're fun. You guys are fun to see. This is, we all need entertainment right now. They should go listen to you on Tuesday.
You get it wherever. And you're on this week.
I'm on this week. We had an awesome chat. That's why I wanted to see your face again. Thank you for being here, Adam Ferrara. Find him everywhere, Instagram. Thank you. Thanks for being here.
In Denver, I will be at the Comedy Works August 20, 21, and 22. It's always good seeing you. Best to you and your family, sweetheart. I hope we talk soon.
Thanks, you too. Thanks for your time. Say hi to your wife. All right, there's so much more to talk about, so don't miss my next episode. Just subscribe to Sex with Emily right now. If you already subscribed, just take a minute to rate and review Sex with Emily. The deal is, the more 5-star ratings we get, the closer we're gonna get to my mission. You know my mission. Lube on every nightstand, liberating the conversation around sex. So I appreciate it. I appreciate you. Thanks for doing that. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. Find us on all social media. It is @SexWithEmily.